Jim O'Neill, developer evangelist in Microsoft's Northeast District, with an overview of what's new in ASP.NET 4, based on a presentation I gave during the Northeast Roadshow in May of 2010. When you look at ASP.NET 4, I think it's important to note that ASP.NET is really much more now than it was about 5 years ago. Many of us equate ASP.NET with web forms, but it's really grown beyond that. So as a framework for the rest of this screencast, I'm going to cover the primary pieces of the ASP.NET stack, focusing on what's new with ASP.NET 4. At the base is what I'll call the ASP.NET 4 core, a set of services and capabilities that serve whatever development model you might choose, whether it be web forms, dynamic data, or MVC, Model View Controller. So what's new at this level? Extensible output caching is one. Output caching, providing an in-memory storage of a page based on its URL and request parameters, has been around since ASP.NET 1.0, but until now it's not been extensible, and it's always been an in-memory cache only. With the new extensibility provided in ASP.NET 4, you can provide your own cache providers, perhaps using alternative storage, disk, cloud, memcached, or even Windows Server App Fabric. Additionally, session state compression via gzip is now available, whether that's in-memory or via SQL Server. There's also more control available over request validation. By specifying maximum lengths of URLs and query strings, what characters can and can't be in a URL, and indeed a hook to look at all aspects of a request, there's more capability for defensive programming, against cross-site scripting attacks, for instance. In combination with ASP.NET 4, IIS 7 also offers a lot of simplification and power to web developers. IIS 7 is a fully modularized architecture, so web servers can now be set up to include just the modules needed, and those modules can be extended or completely switched out depending on the needs of your enterprise. XML configuration and the ability to delegate management of specific aspects of the server, such as control over error pages or configuration of default pages, considerably reduce the overhead for administering IIS. IIS also incorporates an integrated pipeline, so for the first time, each request, whether it be for an ASP.NET page or simply an HTML document, runs through the same processing stages. That means a single point of configuration, and it also means you can use features like the ASP.NET membership provider with simple HTML pages. Application warm-up refers to the auto-start feature of IIS 7.5 in concert with ASP.NET 4 applications. This provides a controlled approach for starting the application pool, initializing an ASP.NET application, and accepting HTTP requests. For applications with a significant amount of initialization, auto-start means the first user to make a request doesn't pay the penalty for priming the pump and kicking in the initialization sequence. Building on top of the core ASP.NET facilities are three main programming paradigms: web forms, dynamic data, and MVC. I'll start with web forms, definitely the most mature of the programming models, and the one with which most of you are likely familiar. The primary theme for web form developers in .NET 4 is control. What web forms developer doesn't recognize this text? It's view state, one of the main components of web forms that makes that model tick. Yet view state can make pages a tad bulky, and with the default always on setting, it's definitely overused. There's always been a setting to disable view state, however it didn't always work the way you'd want it. Once you disable view state, say for a page, you can't turn it on for a component on that page. It's just not as flexible as we need. Enter view state mode, which provides this flexibility as well as an inherent mode to let the current setting flow down the page and component hierarchy. Keep in mind, though, that enable view state still rules for sake of backward compatibility. So if you set that value to false, view state mode really will have no effect. Another common frustration of web forms developers is the rather verbose and sometimes seemingly random generation of control IDs in the markup. Several years ago, when there wasn't as much focus on client-side JavaScript programming, what these entities were called wasn't as important. But today, with more emphasis on the client-side model, on AJAX, on jQuery, having clean and predictable names is important. The new client ID mode property lends control over this scenario, with a couple of values that affect the generation of the client-side ID for the element. Auto ID is the default and backwards compatible option. In addition to client ID mode, there's client ID row suffix, to which you can assign elements of, say, a grid view to produce the unique IDs you need, but with meaningful domain data, like a primary key value of the dataset, versus just the ordinality of the data in the grid. Here are a few more additions to web forms to alleviate some of the pain points you may have experienced. Prior to ASP.NET 4, when you had a selected item on a page, say row 3 of a grid view, that row is highlighted across all of your pages, typically not the behavior you want. Sure, you can code around it, but with the recent release of ASP.NET 4, there are a couple of properties that will make this a declarative versus an imperative code fix for you. As more and more web page designers use CSS, they found that the markup generated from some of the ASP.NET controls can get in the way. so we've simplified the markup in some cases and enhanced it in others to make it more design-friendly. And lastly, to prevent breaking everything in your application, there's the backwards compatibility switch you might consider to use in your migrated configurations until the point when you fully made the leap to ASP.NET 4 and the enhancements it provides. Next up in the control category is routing. Routing came into vogue with the advent of ASP.NET MVC, but it's a feature you can use in ASP.NET web forms now as well. Routing makes use of pattern matching of URLs to map them to a completely different physical structure on the web server. So here, for instance, I have a clean, logical-looking URL. Note there's no ASPX reference in sight. The system.web.routing infrastructure looks at that URL and maps it to a completely different URL, one in this case that more clearly matches the physical file structure of the site. Doing this provides two substantial benefits. First, it insulates your web application from changes to the physical back-end structure of the site. And second, it provides a cleaner URL scheme to your end users, who increasingly use the URL itself as a means to navigate to the various portions of your site. Cleaner URLs are actually a facet of SEO, search engine optimization, and other SEO enhancements have been added to ASP.NET 4. Two page properties, meta keywords and meta description, have been added to support SEO. Ironically, though, meta keywords is rarely, if ever, used by search engines today, since spammers and keyword stuffers have rendered it meaningless. For SEO, the title of your document is actually the most important single element of markup. Meta description is used not for ranking, but for what appears in the search engine results page in Bing or Google when your site matches the search criteria. So it's important to keep it crisp and on message to entice more click-throughs on your site versus on the other sites shown in the search results page. Also added were some new redirect methods to implement a permanent redirect, which is HTTP status code 301, versus a temporary redirect, which has a status code of 302. Search engines will follow 301 redirects, but not 302. So in general, you want to use the newer redirect permanent methods within your own sites. When it comes to deployment, Visual Studio 2010 makes things much easier as well, and not just for web forms developers. Integration with MS Deploy means you can build web packages that include all the IIS settings, web pages and content, and even database scripts needed to deploy your completed website. MS Deploy packages can then be copied to any server and installed via IIS Manager or deployment APIs. Within Visual Studio 2010, you also have the option to use one-click publishing or the MS Build command line. Web config transformation introduced in Visual Studio 2010 is huge. You know how you always have to modify the web config as you move from development to testing to QA to production to change environment settings like database connections? With Visual Studio 2010, you can create transform files, such as web.config.debug and web.config.production, where the third part of the name refers to a deployment profile, or more precisely, an MS build configuration. XML directives in these transform files are automatically applied, so you don't have to make the manual and error-prone changes to the web.config file. Next up is dynamic data, a technology introduced with ASP.NET 3.5 Service Pack 1, but which has also seen a few updates, as well as some of its characteristics carried over to the other technologies, WebForms and MVC. Dynamic data is a scaffolding platform that will quickly build a CRUD website, create, read, update, and delete, given a data model, either linked to SQL or the entity framework. Rather than generating specific pages from the data model, dynamic data employs a series of page and control templates to render the site on the fly from the data model itself. What this means is that the site immediately adapts itself to changes in the data model. Additionally, attributes on the data model translate into UI capabilities and validators. For instance, if the underlying database field for an element is non-null, then pages displaying that field will ensure that non-null data is supplied. The same is true for data that needs to lie within a particular range or match a regular expression. The default experience, with minimal styling, generally doesn't strike people as all that compelling. But the fact that it is an ASP.NET site means that nearly all aspects of the experience are configurable and stylable via CSS, so you can pretty much build whatever look and feel you need, plus gain the benefits of the built-in model validation and CRUD capabilities. What's new in Dynamic Data 4? Well, just as you can add routing to an ASP.NET web forms application, you can pull in dynamic data functionality as well to part or all of your site. The three paradigms, web forms, dynamic data, and MVC, are definitely not all or nothing propositions. Dynamic data also extends its template support to provide more flexibility and options for displaying data pulled from the underlying data model. Support for more advanced modeling scenarios, such as many-to-many relationships and type inheritance, has also been added. Now let's talk about MVC, which isn't exactly new in Visual Studio 2010, except for the fact that it's now delivered in the box versus as a separate download for integration with Visual Studio 2008. MVC stands for Model View Controller, which is a design pattern dating back to the 70s with Smalltalk. It's recently taken a foothold in the web development space as a convenient way to build websites using principles of separation of concerns and test-driven development. In MVC, there are three primary components: the model, which is the data you'll be displaying on the page, perhaps from a database or perhaps from a web service; the view is the markup of the page; and the controller pulls them all together. One of the hallmarks of an MVC application is that there is no code behind the view, and the distinct roles of the three components promote testability. For instance, you could easily substitute in mock versions of, say, the model, so you can test the view without requiring an HTTP request response cycle or access to a live database. New to Visual Studio 2010 is the inclusion of MVC in the box, without the requirement to install other tools or components. Also added is a new abstraction known as an area. Areas are essentially islands of MVC within a large application that enable the application to be componentized more easily. For instance, suppose you have a large customer relationship management, or CRM, site. For a large application, an MVC design can result in a lot of pages and classes in the associated model, view, and controller folders of the physical site, complicating source control and build processes. By creating areas such as customer, product, and employee within the CRM, each of those sections could be individually developed as a mini MVC site, and then those distinct areas pulled into one wrapper MVC project for the final deployment. Asynchronous controllers have also been added, increasing the potential scalability on the server side. And the capability to leverage templates and data annotation and validation have been borrowed from dynamic data and made part of the MVC experience. Lastly, there's some convenient markup changes, such as the one you see here, which provides a shortcut for HTML encoding. Previously, you'd be using the percent equals syntax and need to remember to call server.html encode each time. At the top of the ASP.NET stack here, I've included Windows Azure, Microsoft's cloud computing infrastructure. Azure provides another outlet for deploying ASP.NET websites, whether they be MVC, dynamic data, or web forms, enabling web developers to get the benefits of high availability, failover, and elasticity to serve 10 users or 10,000 users without really any additional action on their part. No procuring and setting up of new servers or hardware. Microsoft's cloud computing platform comprises three parts. There's the core Windows Azure operating system, which provides computation and storage capabilities. In terms of computation capabilities, there exist web roles and worker roles, where web roles correspond specifically to applications running in IIS, such as ASP.NET. SQL Azure, on top of that, provides relational database management capabilities on a par with SQL Server on-premises, and in contrast with Windows Azure Core Storage, which is highly scalable but non-schematized, more akin to NoSQL storage that you may have heard about in recent months. The third tier is the Windows Azure App Fabric, which provides enterprise-level capabilities for secure communication between entities via a service bus. ASP.NET applications in the cloud have always had the ability to interface with these three facets of the Azure platform. So what's new? First is improved tooling support with the initial release of Azure Tools for Visual Studio 2010, and then with notable enhancements in the June 2010 SDK release. When I first presented this material, .NET 4 was not yet available on the cloud, and I'd included Microsoft's statement that .NET 4 support in the cloud would be added within 90 days of the release of Visual Studio 2010. Well, support for .NET 4 in Windows Azure was announced at TechEd 2010, about 2 months after the release of Visual Studio 2010 and .NET 4. So Microsoft definitely made good on that pledge, and then some. Now that I've reached the end of this overview of what's new with ASP.NET 4, I wanted to leave you with a few links to more information. As you can see here by the links, it appears that the ASP.NET team has taken SEO friendliness to heart as well. No unintuitive URLs here. Well, good luck with your foray into the new world of ASP.NET 4. For now, I'd like to thank you for your time and attention and wish you a great rest of the day.